object-oriented programming in the way it's worked in PHP and future versions. And Ken Forms can be as funny as Sterling, but I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Probably a good thing.
And he's bad.
No pissing.
Okay, so without going too much into the concept of object-oriented programming, basically provides you with tools for data abstraction, data hiding. It's just a basic way of developing your applications using classes as containers for data and methods that operate on that data, as opposed to a purely sort of procedural code like Rasmus prefers, for example. Nobody's forcing me to use classes in PHP, but it's sometimes damn convenient for certain things, especially when you create larger frameworks and structures like Pear, for example, is object-oriented. And it also provides a namespace protection, so you don't just dump all your functions in a global scope. You can create classes that encapsulate those and involve them that way. So we'll show the way PHP works with classes. Next slide. Like I said, classes are just data containers that store functions and variables. And in this case, we'll call them methods and properties. And I guess PHP has had support for some object-oriented, for instance, version 3. So 3 and 4, not much has changed in that regard. There's basic support for creating classes, declaring properties, methods, extending them, making instances of objects, and things like that. So, for example, here's a simple class declaration. Say class, simple, open closing brace, and that's it. That's the simplest class you can create, pretty much. It's pretty empty, useless, perhaps. But if you want to define a property inside the class, you just say var and then dollar name and the name of the property. And then you can also assign it a default value if you want.
But not an execution default? Only a compile time default, so you can't, for example, call a function varsumprop equals.
Yeah, it has to be a static value, like a string, a number, or an empty array, for example, stuff like that. Method declaration. Hold on. Okay, so here we want to declare a simple.
I pressed down.
Let's use page then.
Oh yeah, and now it goes too far up. Oh, that was perfect.
So here we just create a simple method called some method, and it's basically kind of just like a regular function, and print hello. It's sort of just spelling up hello, I guess.
German spelling too low.
So in order to access these properties and methods, you have to use the default this object, which if you want to access them from inside the class itself, for example, you want to access the property that you declared inside the method, you just use the dollar this and the arrow operator and the name of the property.
As a favor to those in the back, could you, when you're talking about something, have it sort of be higher up on the screen? Awful.
That's me.
He's controlling it, so yeah. They have a higher up on the screen.
There you go. This is what you're doing, man.
Thank you.
So that's basically a way to access the property that was declared here. And in this case, you can always assign it some value and then print it out. And that's how you access a method of the class from another method. Like I have constructors, basically, methods that are invoked automatically when the class is instantiated, and they just, in this version of PHP, constructors are just declared by giving them the same name as the class. So we have class simple, have function simple, that will assign, some stuff to the property. So when we create an instance of that object, that function, then the constructor will be invoked automatically. And it can take parameters and things like that, all in almost stuff. I'll scroll forward. So objects are basically instances of specified class. Classes are kind of like templates, and objects are specific instances of those implementations. So to make an object instance out of a class, just use the new keyword, say $object equals new simple, that will be your simple object there. If it has a constructor and it makes some arguments, you can simply pass them to the constructor using that syntax there, just by functions. Access object properties, since in PHP 4, all the properties are public, you know, free rejoinment. You can't really make them private, so you just use the arrow operator to access those. Don't pay attention to this ampersand here. It's not really necessary. So here, just to make, it makes a new instance of the object and it prints out the property that it has. Using the same operator, access the methods, scroll up. No, scroll down.
Okay, you said scroll up.
Whatever, move it up.
As far as it goes.
Okay. Everybody can see what's down below? No? Okay. People in the back can see that stuff.
Alright.
Lift it up.
Did you clip all of the character returns out from underneath that?
It's a pattern. You only have extra lines to make something.
Actually, the plug is the people in the front of the room have heads. Those heads are taking far too much bandwidth.
That's what it is. Eliminate those.
Must be it. It basically just shows how you can access them.
Yeah, it's the same examples here, except the last line says prints $Raj, narrow operator, some method, for instance, you know, just calls the method on that object. So, there's plenty of resources on the web and the books that are going to talk about the object-oriented programming PHP and plenty of examples, plenty of sample code. We'll talk about some not-so-simple stuff here. In fact, stuff is just maybe called a bit crazy or we're not sure it's going to be this way in the next version at all.
I'm very rude, by the way.
We're going to talk about aggregation and overloading. And well, aggregation is the idea of one object using another object instance for some functionality, as opposed to inheritance. I mean, the more accepted way of implementing more functionality is you take a class, you extend it, you add some more methods to it, and use those. Well, aggregation, you make an instance of an object that provides functionality and make it a property of your class and invoke methods that way via that instance. You would always do that in PHP, of course, using regular programming, regular object-oriented programming, but we kind of wanted to make it some easier ways of doing it. So there's this kind of experimental support for aggregation, which means that you could add methods and properties to class at runtime dynamically. So let's say, for example, we have this parent class that has a function dAmazing and a child class that has a function simple. And if we just make an instance of a child class, all we're going to have is that simple method. Suppose we wanted the functionality that the parent class provides. Well, we could either just take an instance of that class, assign it to the property in the child class, and call it that way. Or we can use this aggregate function and say, is it failing?
It's bad.
Almost. Anyway.
I'll stand up.
You stand up.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can use the aggregate function, and the parameters you give about the object instance that you want to aggregate stuff into, and then the name of the class that you want to take the methods and properties from. So what it's going to do is going to some internal magic with class entries and stuff like that, and you're going to end up with that object instance having basically transparent access to all the methods from the class that you aggregate from. So if you call $obj and invoke the amazing method on it, this is going to work transparently. I mean, even though it's that method is declared in a completely different class. And that can have a few uses. I think the reason we kind of developed this is because of pair. It had needs where most of the database abstraction layer, it needed to load different drivers on the fly and have those methods available. And that's kind of what we came up with. There's a few other functions that let you like aggregate only specific methods according to the list that you provide or regular expression even and stuff like that, get information about what's aggregated and unaggregate the object.
What happens on construction? At some point, these aggregated objects, is it too
the object as well.
Well, notice that you can only do it on instances, so constructors run before aggregation.
Well, right. So it's not really a parent child relationship.
No, it's basically ideal like mixins on that people are there.
But I think what he's bringing up is that what if the parent class had some constructor that needed
aggregate does not aggregate constructors or private methods. And private methods would just have a convention that they start with underscore. So it would not aggregate the parent class's constructor.
So you just have to be careful what kind of methods you call because they might rely on something from the constructor. Some initialization.
Yeah, and usually, I mean, I don't know if you want to aggregate those classes. Like simpler classes that provide some like interfaces, basically. Yeah.
It's for callbacks, for example, with pair. They provide a few callback functions that are then aggregated.
And once this functionality is put in, there was a big discussion about whether this should stay this way or actually have a support in the language directly for aggregation. I think for the next version. It may be like a class, class A extends something. And also, you're going to be able to say class A aggregates another class, which is fine, I guess, for, class side aggregation, but I also will to figure out a way to make it work for instances. But this is the way it's in right now, and it's going to, I guess, it's staying there for at least foreseeable future. Yeah.
Method conflict.
Method conflicts, it doesn't overwrite the method which the class has. I don't think it fails. It just kind of skips it.
Okay. And you said it doesn't aggregate private method?
Yeah, which underscore, private with underscore.
Does it just not make them available at all, or does it not?
Doesn't make them available.
So if you have methods in the So you aggregate in a method which relies on the internal private method which works. That would no longer work in aggregate.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, like I said, this is still kind of experimental. So. Yeah, I'm not sure if anyone is even using it at this point, but I think Steve was, when we were talking about the pair stuff, yeah, he had good ideas for it. Any more questions? There's no documentation on this yet. There's no documentation on this yet, but if you download the PHP source code, there's in the test directory, there's an aggregation subdirectory where it lists a few examples of that. And I believe it may also have some problems with like maybe using those as sessions. Okay. We'll see. It's like brand new stuff. So. And let's go into overloading. PHP supports this kind of object overloading framework where the extensions can register certain handlers to whenever a property is read or written or method is invoked on an object, then extension gets this handler invoked and it can do stuff dynamically. That's how the COM and Java essentially are implemented basically, so it's all transparent. Well, it was just kind of throwing around ideas saying it'd be cool to do that in user space too. You know, you can have your class basically catch all the accesses to properties and functions and then let you do that, what you want. And this extension kind of came out of that. What you do is basically just declare the specially named methods like underscore underscore get, underscore set, and underscore underscore call. And whenever you read a property or set a property, or call a function, those methods will be invoked as their information. You can process them however you want. I mean, if you're familiar with Python, it has that support too, or Perl ideas. We have it in PHP now. So, in this example, we have a class called overloadme that, declares those specially named methods. So for example, function underscore get, it receives as arguments the property name and then the value by reference. And what we do is just fetch it from an internal array, the property that we want, and set the value to that and return true means, yeah, we were able to access that property fine. Go ahead and false means it will say like undefined property. Set is kind of the same way, except the other way around. So if you scroll down, there's a little example there of how it works. Well, we'll talk about it.
Okay.
The way you do it is you say overload, give it the class name, and after that, all the instances of that class will be overloaded. So we instantiate the object, and then you say object, sum prop equals bam bam go bam. What will actually happen is that the underscore set method will be called, and it will receive the property name, sum prop, as the first argument, and the second argument will be the value that it should set to the property, and then whatever it does with that data after the call is completely up to that method. It can store it in the database, store it internally somehow, you know, whatever. And then you do print some prop and read it back out. So the output there shows that exactly what happened. Not very exciting here, but things it could be used for example, is lazy caching, lazy evaluation. Like if you access a property on an object that comes from a database, for example, you won't need to load it up until it's actually accessed by the user. At that time, you can load it up and then save it internally in the object's properties, and when it accesses the next time, that function won't be called. It detects if the object already has that property, it won't call the get handler. It'll just access it directly. You also can provide specific handlers for certain variables. So if you like scroll up, there's underscore get foo, for example. That means that if you access $obj arrow foo, that's the function that will be called right away. So here we're just assigning the value bar and return true. And if you look at the output, that's exactly what gets returned. Underscore call is the handler that gets invoked when the method is called on the object. And it receives a method name and an array of arguments for that, and also a return by reference that you're supposed to store the return or whatever function you call, if you want to, I guess. In implementation of this example, we just have a list of methods. Scroll up a bit. We have a list of methods there that map like the method that the user calls to the one that we're actually going to call. So all it does is, if you look at the little example, it says print object conf n2br. Well, that object does not have that method right now, but what happens is that the call handler gets invoked. And that looks up the actual method name in the methods array. It says if it's set, we found it, then we call it using call user func array function, get the return method, and then return true. We were able to call it fine. And if you look at the result, it converted those new lines to breaks, basically. So that's the overloading in a nutshell. And I guess some people have been finding it pretty useful for this kind of dynamic processing, depending on properties and methods that get access. It's useful for things like, I guess, SOAP implementation.
What does the overload function do there? Is that what implements this?
Right. It's just an extension of BHP. It's not part of the engine, so that you have to call a function to overload this classes.
But overload depends on those functions and those names.
Yeah, when you call overload, it goes through the class method table and sees, oh, this class has underscore get, so we will enable that handler for it. If it has underscore set, it will enable the set handler. So you can like customize it, you know, if you only want to return properties dynamically, then you only have to define that handler. Or if you want to only do one variable, like the foo variable, you just do underscore get underscore foo. That's what you define the class. That's what happens when the overload function is called.
You have return true, but wouldn't you want to return the RET?
No, because it's passed by reference. the
so that third parameter is
it's basically was made that way to be consistent across all the handlers. So you always return true or false depending on whether you succeeded or not. That's what you were trying to do.
But if you call the method that defines yourself returning true.
Yeah, that means just the in this simple example, yeah. You could, if you return false, it's gonna say unknown undefined function name or something. Just the regular stuff that happens when you call an undefined function. Any more questions about this? I guess not. Okay. Yeah. Object tips. Objects in PHP are not references by default, like in Java and other languages. So you have to pass them into the functions by reference if you want to change their state, basically, or properties. People sometimes forget to do that. So keep that in mind. Well, performance reasons, yeah, so it doesn't make these a lot. I guess that's not really a tip. That's sort of a naming convention, but I guess the private methods in Pear framework and other places that people have been doing it, they start with an underscore. If you know it's a private method, you shouldn't really be calling that. And since those special handlers that we have in overload and misfit relation stuff, they start with underscore, underscore. They're also
so it wasn't me.
That happened in gym stuff.
Yeah, yeah, we take a lot of warm up.
You gotta hit the power button too. Yeah, so yeah.
I can keep going, just to see you there. Okay, now inheritance can be used to share methods between multiple classes, as well as aggregation now, as we talked about. Hit the button again.
Yeah.
The orange. Still more again.
They're ready left then, aren't you?
Any question before it warms up? Yeah.
While we're waiting, maybe Rasmus can tell us what he really thinks about that.
That takes longer than the warm up.
They'll get there. And I'm not saying for people not to use it. I'm saying don't use it in a production environment yet. We do need people using it. We do need people testing it. We do need this stuff to work. There's some cool things coming up too. But yes, it's not ready. So if you're not into testing and helping out with development, stick to Apache 1 for now. Just because the version number is greater than 1 does not mean it's better. Version numbers and names and stuff is completely arbitrary.
The question would be then, as you see the landscape of Apache development, are they slowing or ignoring 1? I mean, how does that work?
One hasn't changed in a long, long time. There are occasional little tiny fixes for sort of some of the weird platforms and stuff, but Apache 1, the odd security patch. But basically we have a whole bunch of developers sitting around with a code base that works. People are happy with it. They're bored. They have nothing to do. So we need to break something, right? Either we break the existing code or we build something new that we can sit and play with, right? Apache 2 is this new thing that they decided not to break Apache 1, probably because just leave it. It works, it's fine. And play with something new. It's been released. I wasn't too happy about it being released at the state it was in. It's sort of only good for static something like that. It does work for simple dynamic stuff. Be really careful which extension you're using PHP. You're really, really sure that your extension is thread safe. I don't necessarily mean the PHP extension, I mean the backend library behind the scenes. If that's thread safe. The example I give everybody, Postgres, the new library, Postgres extension library, is thread safe, except you call any Postgres is not thread safe. So, the whole thing will be thread safe until you make an SQL query that contains script, things can be hard to debug. So,
This is kind of a preview of PHP 500 stuff.
This is PHP 500.
A few years.
It's just a new version number. We don't need that.
Yeah, I think those version numbers.
PHP XP.
Yeah, we'll go next. Object model branding account. Objects are basically references. You don't need to do the custom references. That's the way they can work by default. A whole bunch of things have been fixed and enhanced, but it doesn't need to be so giant. It's just, there's more ways to work with objects and not be frustrated.
Just the thing, the original OO, as you tell it, is new.
Yeah.
Just let us know how much you're paying attention to this slide. Is 5.0 or whatever, 500 coming out like next month, next year?
I hesitate to say, you know, the exact date. I don't know. First quarter next year, second quarter next year. I don't know.
If you're thinking of switching to Java, pay attention. it's just for your interest and so you know what's coming up. And
I mean, like the alpha test release was out just recently.
You can download the new engine with the current PHP 4.
It's pretty stable.
It's on the website. Engine. You can try it. It's going to be a little while.
Yeah, just because everything is... not a lot, but several expansions need to be ported to the engine. You know, it needs to be tested a little bit and stuff and take some time just for QA.
It's not going to happen this year.
Yeah.
We need to run dynamic data as well.
And it's, by the way, the name is not PHP 5.0. It's just going to still be PHP. That's just the slide.
And 5 is not part of the name.
5 is not part of the name. It's the version.
So you are going to be able to have private and protected memory variables. Classes. Yeah. That means like actual data hiding. Yeah. So, and the syntax for that is, you know, just private dollar hello equals something, protect dollar bar. So you can be able to access them from inside the class, but outside the class, private ones available, not at all. That one's only available from the child classes, of course. It does not apply to methods. There are no private methods yet, or protected methods. For performance reasons, as really Zengiz and Telemus, I guess. But at least there are variables now that are kind of private and protected. There is cloning. You will be able to make direct copies of objects just by calling a clone, special clone method defining it. So if you have a class called myClonable, and you have __ clone, that method will be invoked when the engine needs to make a copy of an object as opposed to just a reference to it. So you can, you know, duplicate the data, increase IDs, whatever you want to do in there. Nested classes, you'll be able to have classes within classes, sort of like a namespace hierarchy. That's exactly how namespaces will probably work, except they won't be just, namespaces will be like classes that you can't instantiate. So in this example, you say class DB colon MySQL, class DB colon Oracle, and that just defined that, those classes as being inside the main DB class. And you can also do just class DB and then somewhere inside say class MySQL.
Yeah, you can do it either C++ style, or you can embed classes within each other like Java. You don't have private classes, etc.
And in constructing, you know, just say use the same double column namespace resolution operator. Classes may have a constant, so you can say const a equals hello, and then access it like with the class name double column constant name. So it's a good way to, like, if your class defines a lot of constants so they don't pollute the global namespace, you just define them right inside the class.
Can you say like DB colon then your dollar sign and then a variable so you can say that you use a Postgres or Oracle or MySQL?
I don't know.
Well, you can use static variables, which will be next.
No, that's not what you're talking about. I'm talking about using a dynamic class name.
I think you can do that today. I don't think that's new.
When defining classes.
Oh, with defining classes.
Yeah, when you say like MySQL object underscore object equals new DB colon colon, and add a dollar sign variable.
You're talking about instantiation time. Yes, you can do that.
Instantiation, yes. Yeah, defining here, like with a variable, no. I don't think so.
No, I'm not talking about the class.
But here, it's possible now. So
yeah.
Not quite what you're saying. You can't say new DB colon dollar sign type. You have to make a string which contains the whole thing.
You have to make a string that contains the whole full path to the class, basically. Yeah.
I think that's fixed, though. I'm not sure. Email Z and send that.
It's trivial to test.
Right. Well, anyway, you can have constants in classes.
Yeah. It's the same with final in Java.
Huh?
It's the same concept as final in Java.
Final variable. Importing. You can import class symbols into the current namespace, like in Python, for example. You use class my class, and it'll define as a massive class inside there, a couple of functions. You can import function hello and class my class to from my class, and they become available. So you can just that way, without going through the class. And you can import like functions, constants, and nested classes, I believe. Import methods?
Yeah,
that's what it is. An import function hello. Find out yet?
Oh, sorry.
Unified constructors and destructors allows for more consistency. They no longer depend on the class name. They have special name, underscore construct, underscore destruct. Well, I mean, they can use there are destructors at all. PHP 4.0 didn't really have destructors. And with this, you do have them. It won't automate. It still won't invoke a parent constructor or parent destructor automatically. You have to do that explicitly, but it can be like a good or bad feature depending on how you look. So, but in any case, that's how you apply the constructors and destructors in the new object model. It supports exceptions. So, for example, we can define an exception class, and then keep going. You have a try and catch blocks, basically. So try inside there, you can throw exceptions and catch them in the catch block, or there's no finally clause. That there was a huge discussion about that, but I don't think it's going to be there in this implementation at least. But there's a support for exceptions.
And you don't need your custom exception class. You can also just have I believe Sebastian got that in.
Yeah, you can just, generic exceptions basically that will catch.
Same concept as Java.
Object dereferencing just means that, if you call it a method to return object, you can reference to an operator, right? Not because it's just for variable first. So, like we have this shape factoring method function that depending on the variable you pass in, it'll instantiate different types of objects. So down below there, down below you say shape factoring method, call it with a circle argument, and then right away you can call the draw method. So that's convenient.
Yeah, now you can't put a variable after the static method call double colon. It's kind of weird. You should be able to. I've never tried that.
That's about the overview of the what's in the new engine concerning objects. There are a couple of other things, but
never mind. Yes, you can. Typo.
That's
it. Colon colon dollar B bracket bracket works fine. So the dollar B is some kind of static method somewhere that returns it.
Okay. Cool. So more information about this stuff. Well, any questions yet, first of all, about the little preview?
Yeah. The exception handling, is that, try catch, is that only going to be in the context of classes, or is that going to be available as a general language construct?
It is a general language construct.
But you throw classes only.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And when you catch an exception, it's the, generic exception is probably just a string. If you throw an exception class of fun. It's going to be a class. Okay. More? HPO, Android programming documentation is a dead URL. That's just the current version. Zend engine 2 changes are available at this URL. If you click on that. Just our CVS repository. I don't know. Anyway, Zend Engine 2 mailing list is over there. I think the Zend.com site has archives for that if you want to go for everything. Overloading README is that URL too. There's no aggregation README right now.
There is no aggregation between the
There's what?
There is a negation
between the
HTML.
Someone has
the document. Oh, really?
Yeah, CBS. I don't know that.
It's not on the website, though, is it?
Yeah. Okay.
And it's because of a big discussion about whether it should stay that way or not. So I guess I'm done with my part here. You're back to scrolling. Go back to reading email.
I haven't can anymore.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to crash again by accident, or?
Your phone?
Yeah. For those of you who know European phones, he entered in my PIN wrong 4 times, so now I have a puke code down there. Thanks. Does that work?
Okay, cool.
Alright, okay, we're gonna go over now curl. What curl is, this is our miscellaneous section, it's just cool stuff you can do to make yourself go faster. And, okay, not optimization, I'm sorry. I didn't say that, just go there. What curl is it makes your life easier, by making things go faster. It's a URL request library written by Daniel Sedberg. He got tired of having to constantly link-rock every protocol out there from HTTP to FTP, HTTPS, to Gopher to Dict, to LDAP even. And so he wrote a general-purpose library called Client URL Request Library that handles all of that for you. It's also very fast. Benchmarks, in some cases, 2 times faster than internal PHP. So you want to use this when you're doing URL requests. It's also very, it's more advanced than FOpen support, which is also very nice. But it's not that much more advanced, and it allows you a lot more power. For example, you can tell proxies, which we'll go over. The CVS version of PHP supports FOpen SSL, but for a long time, curl was the only way to use, SSL websites. And it supports a lot more protocols, so I have funny sliding bullets now. Yeah, there you go. Code is done in heavily optimized C. A lot of people, when they need customized URL requests, will write their code in PHP itself. The curl code is written in C, and this guy is a freak about speed, so it's run very fast.
You are too.
Yeah, that's right. Well, no wonder I like it. it's actively developed. It's actively developed by one person, but it's actively developed. actually there are about four inactive or somewhat active developers, but...
What's an inactive developer?
Me, for example. someone who doesn't read the mailing list anymore. It supports SSL, and that's really important. And also, because you needed it done yesterday, if you want to write your custom code, yes, that's going to take you a while. Curl is very easy to program with, and it provides all the code for you. So let's go and just see some basic curl. Okay, so here's how you use curl to download a web page and return it in a variable. First, you initialize a curl handle. Curl works on the concept of resources. Resources map PHP variables to C structures. Internally, curl uses C structures. We can't use that directly in PHP. So we initialize curl with a URL. We could, the URL option is optional
to curl init. You can also specify it with curl setup. But you obviously, when you're using a URL request library, need a URL to request. And I just find it easier to put it there. By default, curl outputs data to standard out. So you grab it and it just jumps it. That's how the library is designed. PHP offers a neat little function, a neat little wrapper that will save that data that's outputted by using curl's callback structures. And so there I set return transfer because I want to return it into the data variable. If you just need to directly output a web page, and then just use curl exec and it'll pass it through, it's faster, but it's not as convenient sometimes. And then curl close, it's not necessary. All resources in PHP are automatically cleaned up via garbage collection. However, I just like putting it there. It's clean. I think it looks cleaner. It sort of closes off the block. And then we print out the data. And that's a very simple example, which will download the PHP website and print it out. No caching, but it's nice. Excellent. Curl also supports proxies, which is quite cool, because a lot of times you are behind the proxy and you need to request stuff. With curl, you just set the serial lock proxy variable. Yeah, I hate proxies. I'm behind one that blocks all ports except 80 and 443. So I can't do IRC or read my mail properly without a web client. So you just set the proxy and it automatically goes through that. You can also set a user and password to the proxy. Curl does not do NTLM authentication for you, unfortunately. That's a feature that's planned. For those of you who don't know, NTLM auth is a Microsoft IIS protocol that it's a secure way of passing username and password information between the client and the proxy. It doesn't even work well with Unix browsers because it requires a username, password, and domain. But Galleon and Mozilla don't support the domain name. You can get around that using Python proxy. I forgot the name. If you do want to use NTLM auth with curl, there is a proxy I forgot to search the internet for. You can set up an internal proxy that does the NTLM auth for you and then have curl tunnel through that. Bit of a hack, but it works. Then curl exec downloads and displays ESPN.com because we all know you need the latest sports news. Curl also supports the feature of proxy tunneling, meaning you can tunnel other protocols through an HTTP proxy with curl. That's if the proxy is not smarter than curl. A lot of proxies have checks for that. Also, obviously, our state wouldn't work. Curl, however, doesn't require state in any request. But to do that, you just set the HTTP proxy variables, and then you set the HTTP proxy tunnel. So here you're tunneling FTP connections through curl. And that's for the cool feature of curl, SSL connections now. That's how easy it is to do SSL with curl. It's a few lines and you are set. Curl supports the URL syntax format, so you can specify username, password, syntax there. You can also specify all the different protocols. For example, that might as well be Gopher or Dict or whatever you like there. That execs and does it. You need to compile OpenSSL support into PHP in order to use SSL with curl. You also need to install curl with OpenSSL. I know it sounds basic, but believe me, I have the support mails to prove it. Of course, my code is a problem.
You like curl.
That's right. Of course. Okay, so that's a new feature. Now, the next thing you can do, this is where curl becomes really useful, I think. You can post fields to a remote server. And if you've ever had a hand code post submissions, you know it's a PETA, and for PETA, pain in the butt. And so it automates this for you. There are, again, some PHP classes that will do it for you, but like Snoopy, written by Andre and Monty. However, they're not as fast, and also
as we
I mean, as pretty as that. It's just so sexy. And curl just does that automatically. It can do that through HTTPS. It can do that through FTP, except FTP doesn't support that. But it does it through HTTP and HTTPS, or any port support, I suppose. And that's just basically an overview of it. This section is really to just give you a better idea of what you can do in PHP. For more information, again, this presentation is online. Yes?
Is curl going to be coming with PHP and versions coming up?
If the author of the curl module would get off his lazy butt, yes. Unfortunately, I can't. It's something that's definitely planned and I think would be very cool for it, because you can then even hook that into the PHP's native open support and native libraries like that, which will improve performance and also give us a standard way of code sharing, because when a bug gets fixed, curl supports all the inconsistencies of HTTP, which if you've ever had to deal with are quite a few, and every bug that gets fixed in curl would then get fixed in PHP, so we don't have to worry about that maintenance. So that is something that's planned, but if anyone wants to help, yeah.
One of the nice things, just happened to speak to me, that about curl is that when doing SSL, it also supports certificates, both validation of server certificate and submission of client certificates as well.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't tried the 4.3 CVS with SSL support in FOpen. Do you know if that, no.
Can do that. So. Curl again. Yeah. That's a perfect example where curl, it makes, as you saw, SSL was very simple, but you can also go very advanced with curl. FOpen support is wonderful when you just need it quick, and for a newbie, it's even better. Oh, I just do this. But curl supports the full range of protocols as far as that's concerned. I believe there's...
Yeah. I just want to point a few things out. One, curl, there's a command line version of curl as well that comes with, from the website, which is very helpful in troubleshooting any type of access problem. Yeah. Also, there's another thing on the internet called curl, which is some language that's supposed to replace HTML.
Yeah, it was supposed to replace HTML 5 years ago, or
I don't know why they overloaded the name.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how long ago it was supposed to replace HTML. I'm still waiting.
Hardly anyone's heard of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Curl and meta HTML. Yeah. Wave of the future.
That next HTML. But yeah, I mean, the curl language is buzzword compliant. So.
Well, and yeah, I think the real point there, and you've seen confusion with Mail on this, don't go to curl.com looking for what he's talking about.
Yeah.
You'll be disappointed.
Right. Right. In both ways. curl.hacks.se is where it is. And you'll notice there's ample documentation. The PHP curl docs are a bit out of date, I believe. I don't know if anyone's updated them lately. But curl provides a somewhat one-to-one mapping with the C API. So if you're looking for an option, check the curl C API, see if it's there. And if it says a char pointer, translate that to a string, integer, basic idea. Okay, curl is great. You are URL requests. However, sometimes you need to go a little bit lower. For that, we have sockets. In the most basic sense, PHP supports sockets via fsockopen, which is a program that maps your page to a standard I/O interface. And by doing that, you can see we have fsockopen there. It opens a connection to php.net, actually www.php.net, and port 80 with an error node, an error string. Those are references. So you'll have your error or your error string placed in there, and then you have a timeout. Now that, I gotta admit, is quite cool, simply because if you've ever coded C, you know timeouts. Connect timeouts, yeah, you just have your little function for it, but there are another PETA, we'll just pretend it's not vulgar. They're just another PETA, and here PHP handles that for you, make sure it's done easy. It's quite nice. Then we just do a simple GET request, which curl will do nicely for us, and while it's not the end of file, we echo out the website. A simple example. This is really, I think, all that the socket support in PHP, the basic support is really good for. I mean, variations of this, you can get a bit more advanced. You have also the ability to set blocking on sockets. So you can say either don't wait for data, just fail immediately if there's no data, or you can also say
set the timeout
on sockets, which would then affect non-blocking sockets, or blocking sockets, like that blocking sockets then. But there is another alternative. Around PHP 4.0, the socket extension was added, and this adds a pretty good low-level mapping to the POSIX socket API. It's done in a PHP-ish way, but if you've used POSIX before, then you've used PHP sockets before. It's kind of when you need low-level socket access. I mean, it's all web programming, so I don't know how useful it is, but if you use JSON's PCNTL extension, which is, gives process control under Unix, you can fork PHP and do all sorts of crazy stuff with it. Then it's, I've seen people, actually we have an example here of a socket server written in PHP.
That's more, so.
Oh yes, that's right. We have no links. Somebody has written a full-fledged HTTP server in PHP. And, yes.
Does it embed PHP?
It's multi-threaded.
There are people crazier than me. Look at that.
I've seen someone do it in Shell.
Or Mac. That's your third-level college project, right? Right. HTTP server, your favorite program.
Yeah. Yeah, only use it if FSOC Open doesn't work. I mean, there are probably slight performance gains, but again, you're using PHP. It's only if you need the more advanced features that you should really use the extension, because it does add complexity. All right, next. TCP client.
Half an hour left.
Okay, so... Oh, wow, I thought we had longer. I was stalling a bit. All right, this is a socket, TCP client. It's very simple. For those of you who know the POSIX API, I'm not going to get into describing TCP IP to you because we have 30 minutes and I don't know how to do it anyway. Basic concept is you create a socket of type an INET socket that's streaming. You then connect that socket to a address that you call with get host by name, and then you write a simple request with it and read the output. This is the same example as FSAC Open with PHP.NET. It's a bit more advanced, but you can do some funky stuff with it. Okay, next is UDBP. UDP is a connectionless protocol that allows you to send basically the concept of messages, wake up, shut up, get up, etc., over IP, using IP. And this is a basic example. You can use it. I'm not going to go over this too much. There's ample documentation before. It's also, I couldn't really teach you how to use sockets in this example at all. It's just to show you it can be done. This is how it's mapped. Next. Socket servers. Alright.
Your word gets sexy.
Yeah, this is wrong. It's so sexy, you don't know. First we set the time limit to 0. PHP scripts default to a timeout of 30 seconds. Setting it to 0 means it never times out. OB implicit flush means don't use out for buffering at all. We create a socket. What bind does is it binds a socket to an address and a port. If you notice there, though, if you use Unix sockets in the POSIX API, you'll have to resolve that into a struct host. And here you don't have to. Just specify the address and port. We do it for you. It's quite nice. And then you set a listen backlog that tells to listen with a buffer of 10 clients. And then you accept different clients. We write messages, welcome, hello, how are you, good day, etc. goodbye. You read the response, and then we have two special actions. You can quit the server, or you can shut down the server, or you can write, or if you just type in anything like, you're so pretty, it will say, you wrote, you're so pretty. And that's the basic concept of using a socket server. Non-blocking I.O. Alright, this is where socket extension does actually become useful. With SSOC open and such, you can't do non-blocking I.O. What that allows you to do is say, I want to pull a set of sockets, meaning I want to look at a set of sockets, and when one of these sockets becomes available for reading or writing, or there's an exception on one of them, I want to be able to perform some action on that socket. And PHP supports it in the same concept as the POSIX API, except instead of FD sets, which is in the POSIX how you do it, you would create a file descriptor set and then pass it to socket select. We just use an array of sockets. Socket select modifies its arguments, so you're going to want to assign it to a temporary variable that gets modified, and then you can, after socket select returns, you can check if socket 1 is in the read pool, and if so, do an option. The last argument, which is a 0, is we provide an easy way of doing select timeouts. So you can say, you can either specify a number of seconds or an array of seconds and microseconds, like a TV in C. Alright, next. And here's where I prove I was as crazy as the guy who wrote the web server. Here's a basic socket. Now again, this is all online, so if you want to take a look at it in more detail then, you can definitely do that. Here's a basic socket daemon that will start up. It will do non-blocking I.O. Go down, close car, and just closes. It will, operate. Alright, yeah, there we go. It'll check, to see what sockets are active and then perform actions on those sockets depending on whether they're active. It, again, socket set option, that's mapping to C's socket setup, sets up. There we just reuse the addresses, so they can be released back. And socket get peer name is a way of getting the remote client, getting their address and their port, that the person is connecting to you. That's a TCP/IP thing only. This is a TCP/IP server. And that one. Okay. Yeah. And then this supports kill, quit, and then we just dump out some data like the other one. But it's sexy because it's using non-blocking I.O. And you can go into this a bit more detail. PHP doesn't really support good, well, it has good documentation on just how it works, but it doesn't really have good documentation on tutorials. If you want to learn more information, next slide by the way, about how PHP socket extension works, I would suggest learning about how C handles sockets first, and then you can map your experience over between the two. Here we have TCP/IP tutorial and UDP explanation. There, if you have a nice long plane ride back from OSCON and you have nothing to do, the movie sucks, it's some romance story or something, you can read how TCP/IP and UDP works. NanoWeb is the, in case any of you want to run a really cool PHP web server, that's the URL for NanoWeb, and then the PHP socket extension, that's the documentation, that's more of a reference. I suggest you use this presentation along with the documentation, and you can sort of cross-reference it just to see what can be done if you do have problems getting involved with the socket extension. However, if you have C programming experience, it should be a piece of cake. Any questions? Yeah.
I'd like to make a real quick comment on the socket extension and the SSOC open functions. There's been news of business place provisions problems that search folks that need.
Oh yeah, what he said was that there were numerous bugs in the socket extension, written by someone else of course, and I read perfect code, remember. And therefore, they have been fixed in the latest version of PHP, so if you are experiencing some problems and you don't think it's you because you're perfect like me, just check the bugs.php.net and see if somebody's already experienced that bug and it's close.
The majority of them were on Windows.
Okay, of course. That's not PHP's fault, see? Any other questions? Want me to go over it more? I mean, we have PHP extensions next, which are fun. And then we say goodbye. So, okay, PHP extension time. Why a PHP extension? It slides in really nice. Yeah. Well, for one thing, you can interface with third-party libraries. One of PHP's greatest strengths is that it supports a lot of third-party libraries, meaning you can do anything PHP from OpenGL. Yes, there is an extension for that, and it goes very fast. To LDAP, to SNMP, to MySQL, Oracle, you know what I mean. It also provides you low-level operating system access. Sockets are okay with the socket extension, but if you need real speed, meaning you don't want to have a lot of buffer copies, you want to access C socket functions without any stuff in between, you want to do some async I/O, it's really nice to use a low-level operating system functions and core functions. I don't really suggest that unless you're a C programmer already. It prones you more to errors, but if you are a pretty C programmer, you should have no problem.
You mean there's no, like, wizard?
I just email Andre with questions. I'm glad to answer them. Next. Oh, yeah. Next. Oh, yeah, you missed pointer redirection.
And, hey, you're not a real C programmer if you don't like pointers.
Exactly. And, of course... And of course, malloc violations.
Not a beef, though.
Yeah. Features. We're going to just do a sample extension here called the PHP zip extension. It opens a zip file. Browses a zip files have directory structures like tar files. thank you. And you can also access and decompress singular files. And so next. Alright, so this is your basic PHP extension. That's a ls command. It lists the current directory and shows you all of them. Config.m4. PHP has a nice build system, or sort of a nice build system. It's all done via configuration files, including your makefiles, etc. We'll go over that in a bit. That you specify all your configuration information, third-party library decks, whatever you like. Credits, PHP credits, if you're going to commit this to CVS, which I suggest, or Paris Peco, PHP has auto-generated credits, so that's where you make who you are. CVS ignores just for files you don't want committing to CVS. This is, again, a PHP-specific thing. Then you have phpzip.h, that's your header file. Tests is a directory which you can put all your regression tests in. PHP, although it's beyond the scope of this tutorial, has a quite a nice regression testing system, and you can therefore write regression tests to make sure that it's a good idea to write regression tests to make sure that when you fix one bug, which you would never have, all your other the code doesn't break and your older stuff doesn't break. Zip.c is your source file, and zip.dsp default is your Windows projects. PHP only compiles under MSVC. Plus 6.0 and above. There is an extension wizard for creating PHP extensions.
What I said, it's what I was.
It's called Extension Skeleton, and it basically will create that directory structure for you as an extension, and it will give you sample information. I suggest you do it like that. It will add help information in all the different files, so you can just go in and start off the ground running. It's quite nicely. Gives you little foolproof instructions. Kind of nice. Just be out of your file and you'll...
Yeah, like it repeats after six.
Rinse and repeat, basically. Next. Source file. First includes. I'll just generate all those. Function. I use a special subset of English. Alright? So first the includes, then you have, this is where you include your socket code or whatever third-party libraries. You also may include any PHP library functions that you have. Then you have function entries. We'll show a sample source file in just a little bit. But function entries is you must declare that function to be a part of PHP, which is then loaded in. Then you have a module entry, which sets properties for that module, including what functions that module contains. And finally, you have your PHP functions. And buggy code is just a typo. Config.mpor, it's where you do all your config stuff, right? Library and header checks for third-party libraries. You can also check, for example, Solaris has a different get host by name R, and you can do checks like that for messed up sys stuff. You also put your make files in there. You tell it what files to build, what files not to build. So let's just go to the PHP repository. So if you go there, you have your so tick includes right there.
Okay.
As you see, you have PHPH. That is basic PHP library functions. We provide a set of functions for you that allow you to create PHP libraries. PHPNE is so you can add PHPNE entries and you can access current PHPNE entries. And then phpzip.h is our library specific, as our extension specific files. It has zlib, zziplib, that is defined in our config.mpor file. If the user decides to put configure with zlib, then we test for that there. After that, we can include files that are kind of necessary. Info.h, zziplib.h is the zzip files. You don't want to include that unless, of course, the extension is getting built. And info.h is for the PHP. If you've ever used PHP info, every file defines its own info entries. Then I just have old binaries that not define our systems. Here are some somewhat global variables. Resources do not need to be spread safe. In PHP, you just define them at the top of your file. Actually, resource descriptors. You basically, what PHP has is a
builder for it.
Okay, yeah, we're not going to go into this. We don't have the time.
Function entries.
But there's the function entries. That's the function name, and then that's the what arguments it takes by references. That's a bit masked. We're not going to go over that. But suffice it to say, that's a function entry, and you need to add those. You're not often going to use functions that take arguments by reference. Then you have your module entry. Standard module header is just some basic properties that you most likely won't use unless you're writing something like PHP Accelerator or PHP Debugger. Module name, the function list. Then you have the module initialization. This is called when PHP is loaded up. For example, when Apache starts a new process, this is when that's called, or in CGI mode, it's called every time. Then below that, you would have the PHP module shutdown function. That's called when the process is killed. Then you have the PHP request init function. That's also null, by the way. That's called when a user makes a request. And Apache, for example, would have that soft process serve the request. And then you have a request shutdown function, which handles when the request is ended. And
PHP... Not all of them had to be used all the time. That's why they're null, though.
Yeah. And not all of them are mostly used, actually. PHPMinfo is what you display when the PHP info is called. No version yet. Extensions can have version numbers, and this is something that's recent, and it should have a version number, but...
Yeah, it's part of PHP.
Yeah, it's so new that it's like, half a year? A year? New? Right there is a bit of DL code. That just exports the zip module if you're using DLs. When resources are destroyed, for example, someone calls zzip close to close a zip file, the resource, this function is called to free that resource entry. And what we do there is we simply get access to the resource and get it in. That's another function that I'll explain in a minute. It's pretty. It's sexy. It's nice. All right. Here is how you register your destructors. What?
That's how you register resources.
Yeah, it's how you basically register resources with PHP that then can be located through other functions. Or register the resource type. Returns S. Yes. PHP info will just show you, again, PHP info output. We have a bunch of little functions that will allow you to display that. Take a look at extension standard info.h is where it is. Alternately, I mean, that's all you really need. Finally, you have what we're going to the meat of it, which is PHP function. And now we go to the next slide. Functions are first declared header file. You declare that with the PHP function macro, and PHP function macro, function name, close thing, close semicolon. There we go. And then you add it to the function entry using the PHP underscore FE, and then you can write your PHP functions as... Where? Okay. Functions must use then parse parameters. Unscroll them off. There you go. In order to access parameter data, we'll go over this in a second. Functions must use then parse parameters. I'm lying, but it's a good lie, and it's good for you. So, just use then parse parameters. There is a lower level API, but it doesn't provide the same set of error checking that nparse parameter does, and it's, again, not as sexy. It is slower, though. Look at that. Objects are accessed via the getDist macro. In the PHP function macro, it specifies a list of arguments that you take. GetDist is just a wrapper around that variable name. Finally, resources are used to map C data structures to PHP runtime data. And then returning data is done via the return underscore macros. Now back to the file. Okay, as you can see, we use send parse parameters here. What that does is send number of args is the argument count, pass the function, TSRM LSCC, PHP's thread safe. That's a part of that thread safeness. Just pass it there. You don't really need to know. If you're interested, I leave the readme.tsrm file. Then that's the next argument is the argument specifier. It says that we accept one argument of type string, that's S, and that's the file name, a variable which we declare as a character up there, and the file name length, which we declare as an integer. And on failure, it returns failure. On success, it returns success. This does all the error reporting for you, so the old way you have to call the PHP error function and output an error. Here you just return from the function. Right there is mode and base stir stuff. We're gonna go over that. It's basically PHP security settings. If you've ever used open base stir and state mode in PHP, that's how it's done. You can go over that anytime you like. Here's how we do it. We first open a zzip dir archive. And we return it into a zzip structure. That's just an arbitrary C structure. If that's null, we output, this is how we output the warning in PHP. Get active function name, we'll get the currently processing function name. And then file name is the file name we attempted to open. Now comes the interesting part. To register a resource with PHP, what you do is you use the send register resource macro. And this does require state information, I believe, from the PHP function. Yeah, exactly. So that requires that you're in a PHP function for this to work, and you just register that archive as a in the return value. And it's a type of zipdir, the type that we have registered the destructor for above. So you have that, and then you return it to the user. Return value is the variable name of when you use the return long macro, etc., or return string, return double. it's actually just modifying return value variable, which is passed to the function with the PHP function macro. No, that's not confusing. Okay, now the next important point before we can go, actually two important points with that, is you fetch resources using the Zen fetch resource macro. That does error checking for you. It's sexy as well. Archive P is the Zval, I believe. Archive P is the structure that you want it to fetch it into. Zzipdir is the type. Zzipdp, that's a Zval that we fetch with Zen fetch parse parameters. As you can see above there, type R is type of resource. Zvals are, if you can imagine it, just the basic type of PHP. Everything in PHP is a Zval, which is a structure that contains different entries, whether they be, is it a string, is it an integer, is it an array, is it an object, is it a double, is it crazy, is it a resource, whatever you like. And that's, we fetch that into a Zval, and fetch there. Lzipdir name, that's just the name of the resource that we're fetching, and a destructor, or the type. Something to point out there, malloc is used. PHP supports custom malloc functions. You don't use malloc in your PHP libraries. You use emalloc, efree, erealloc, and these provide error checking for you, as well as debug information. When PHP is compiled with enable debug, it will track buffer overruns, unfreed data, etc. And it's a neat little thing. You rarely want to use malloc data. There are cases where you might need to with dealing with third-party libraries, but for the most part, emalloc works fine. And okay, back to the. We have 10 minutes. Oh wow, I'm fast. So questions now. This you can. Did I just leave?
You should have gone with C-type extension.
C-type. Oh god. That's just such a funny.
That's an easy one.
Yeah. Is there any questions? Did I give you a good introduction to it? Okay. So yeah, just nod. Yes. Yes. Perfect. Okay. I'm glad because that makes me feel good inside now.
That's what matters.
Exactly. And the Zend API documentation. It's basically what I just said, written down. except it's a bit more advanced. It'll go into return long, return double, the different types of macros you want to use, and stuff like that. It's a very good API documentation. It is being updated more now, I believe. It used to be stagnant for a while, but it's supposedly quite good now.
Mentioned the test suite regression testing suite earlier.
Yeah.
The only one I've ever bumped into is PHP unit, but I know that there's something that you guys are using. What specifically is it? I haven't been able to find.
It's basically Stig's hacks on top of Rasmus's hacks. It's a custom writ testing framework for PHP that Rasmus wrote for PHP version 3 and was then ported to PHP version 4.
It's actually version 2.
Oh wow.
It goes way back to like 1972.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, before I was born, yeah.
Is it something available for...
No, it's not that complex.
Yeah.
Or even nice. We've been meaning to completely rewrite it many times. I mean, all it does is sort of, it has a file that has the test program and the expected output. And there's a bunch of shell scripts that sit and read that and say, okay, run the test program, compare the output to the expected result, and then outputs failed or success on that particular test. And then there's just another script that runs through all the directories full of these test programs, running each individual test, and tells you whether each test failed or not. I mean,
they can simulate get post ads.
Yeah, I mean, and then there's another little line in each file where you can put in any get arguments, any post arguments, any cookies, things like that that needs to be provided to each little PHP script to actually test if it works. But it only runs off the command line. So we're running the PHP command line tool. It necessarily tests some of the issues that are in PHP when the PHP is built into a specific web server, which is a little bit hard to test because then suddenly you have to drive through port 80 and then you have to do the whole thing.
doesn't have web server communication, for example, or a socket manipulation like that.
I mean, we could package it up, but there must be thousands of these little hacks out there on the web that are probably better. I just wrote one specifically for you.
Any other questions? About PHP Extend? Oh, no. Just waking up?
No, I'm just scratching.
Any questions about the presentation in general? Anything we went over? Anything you'd like more information about? No? Okay.
This is unrelated to the presentation, but are you going to come up with like a PHP developer for part 2?
Version 2 is out, but
second edition
is out. However, don't buy it.
Just because the version number is greater.
Yeah, exactly. For example, version 3 is planned, but it's planned. It's not created or made yet.
So there are a bunch of cookbooks coming out from other publishers.
How long are they?
I didn't write them. I'm neutral. there is a books page. I don't know if you've seen it on php.net. php.net/books.php. A bunch of them. Just, I don't know. Probably close to 100 php books out there.
Which would probably be the same time as the PHP Ghostwriter third edition, but
do you guys get a nickel for each one of those books?
We get a lot less than that.
No, I mean, unless you wrote it, you don't get it. PHP project doesn't get it.
We get
and even the ones that we write, we get
get some flues.
Not a financially viable. I mean, I can consult for about a day and a half, or I can spend 3 months on a book and make what I was saying.
He gets paid a lot for consulting in a day and a half.
You increase your rates, too.
Yeah. Really, I mean, you should hook me up with the same people, but there will be a version of it. And php.net book is actually an excellent source for all the books. You can see which ones you like, etc. Any other comments or questions? Alright. Thank you all for coming.
Great.